Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. The first case on our calendar is 07-288-07-410, Albert Walker Ahmad versus AK Steel Corporation. Mr. Blessing.
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court. I'm David Blessing, and I'm here on behalf of Abra Walker Ahmad individually and his special administrator for her mother, Sheila Walker's estate. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Sure. This court has already recognized that the open and obvious doctrine does not apply when the landowner or occupier has violated a statute. We're asking that this court recognize that a violation of administrative safety regulation is a corollary to this exception to the open and obvious doctrine. So if there's evidence that an administrative safety regulation was violated, and also evidence of proximate cause, the issue should go to the jury, and the jury should determine whether the landowner or occupier violated his duty. This court has ruled a number of cases on this issue, but courts of appeals have differently interpreted those cases. Most recently, in 2003, this court ruled in Armstrong v. Best Buy that the open and obvious doctrine is a viable doctrine. That case stated in the syllabus that when a danger is open and obvious, an owner or occupier owes no duty to persons lawfully on the premises. It also states that when a danger is open and obvious, there is that there can be no negligence claim. This case is best viewed as a general pronouncement of the open and obvious law. I think there are exceptions that the language of this opinion doesn't account for. And this court in Robinson v. Bates just last year decided one of those exceptions.
The counsel in Best Buy, if I recall correctly, was that the guardrail that somebody tripped over on the way into the store?
Yes, Your Honor. It was a guardrail at a Best Buy store.
And you're not suggesting that Best Buy has to be modified for you to prevail because there wasn't any statutory or regulatory scheme or building code that was violated by that towpath for the shopping carts, as I recall?
Correct, Your Honor. The Armstrong case didn't deal with violations of administrative safety regulations, as this case does. And I think that Armstrong case doesn't need to be changed or reversed.
So your principal argument is, if there is a violation of a building code or a safety standard or something of that nature that is in the mix, that occurred, that's in the proximity of where the incident occurred, then the open and obvious doctrine, or essentially it takes away the duty, doesn't it, the open and obvious?
That's the way it's been treated in the case law.
That just doesn't come into play. So a duty still remains, and then you still have to prove proximate cause. You have to prove that the absence of the railing here, it wouldn't have caused the fall or contributed to it. It might have enabled your client to save herself.
Correct, Your Honor. I think all the other elements.
So that's, I mean, your case is still not an easy one to win if you persuaded us to your point of view.
Correct, and a jury still has, even after all the other elements are proven, a jury still has to find that the violation was unreasonable. It still puts that determination in the jury's hands.
So, counsel, if we looked at it another way, are you saying that an administrative requirement, a safety requirement, creates a duty that cannot be trumped by open and obvious.
Well, Your Honor, I'm looking at it. I'm suggesting that this court adopt a little bit of a different rule, where instead of creating a duty, the violation of the open and or the violation of the administrative safety regulation merely suggests that the open and obvious doctrine does not apply. So instead of creating a duty, it would just not obviate the common law duty.
So you take that defense away from the defendant. You're taking the open and obvious out of the equation when there's an administrative either safety or other type of rule that has been violated. That's what you'd like us to, an opinion containing that rule.
Correct, Your Honor. I think a jury should decide when there's an invitee is here, whether the landowner or occupier maintained the premises in a reasonably safe condition. This court just over a year ago in Robinson v. Bates stated that the open and obvious doctrine didn't abolish the duty created there. In that case, a tenant tripped and fell on an exposed concrete footer. The court noted that there was evidence that it was open and obvious, but found that because there was a statutory violation in that case, the open and obvious doctrine didn't affect her negligence claim, and she was still allowed to maintain her negligence claim.
Although counsel there were talking about the duty of a landlord to repair the premises, so that was that's a statutory duty that's created. Here, when you're talking about administrative safety regulations, are you limiting it to when a regulation is for safety? I mean, I can feature a number of building code, say, requirements when there's a situation involving what appears not to be a latent danger, but something very clear, where an individual who's taking proper care of herself or himself is aware, you know, this is a dangerous situation, I have to protect myself, and then we come back later and say, well, there was a violation of 2 inches here because it didn't follow the code. Is that the type of thing you're saying would abrogate the open and obvious defense?
I believe that yes, the safety violations would get rid of that open and obvious defense if the jury actually found that a safety regulation was violated.
So you would basically have the jury decide whether a code violation, say, was a safety violation. The whole idea here is just to get it to the jury. Is that what you're arguing to
us?
Yes,
Your Honor. I believe the jury can make the best determination of.
So then the jury would not be able to come back with an open and obvious a finding based on open and obvious.
Your Honor, I the reason I am advocating this position is because the open and obvious doctrine didn't abrogate the duty in Robinson v. Bates. And I think given read in the context of the case law, it makes the most sense if the open and obvious doctrine is not used as a defense.
Well,
if there is some type of legislative violation of a legislative enactment.
So it's as a matter of law, the defense would not be able to even put forth open and obvious at the trial. That would be removed from the consideration of the jury. Is that how you're going to envision it?
I think open and obvious is a lot of times it's used as a legal defense, but I think evidence that a condition is open and obvious would factor into a jury's determination of reasonableness. And I don't believe the conditions and surroundings of the danger is something that should be prohibited. I think the jury should be able to take all these circumstances into account in making its determination.
Okay. So
if we would adopt your position, would we necessarily impact and modify Armstrong or Seidel versus Humphrey?
I don't believe so. I think...
How do we tell trial judges when they should or shouldn't instruct on open and obvious?
I think there should be an instruction on open and obvious when there is no violation of a statute or an administrative safety regulation. And this...
If you're arguing a violation, that's a jury issue as to whether there is or isn't a violation.
Correct, Your Honor. The jury would take into account all the evidence and determine first whether there was a violation of the regulation, second, whether that violation proximately caused the injury, and then only third, look at whether there's a breach of the duty.
Well, what? If that's so, and the jury found there was no violation, then would you move to an open and obvious defense?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
How would that work in terms of presentation of evidence to a jury?
Well, I think the jury would have to decide on the issue of whether there's a violation first, and just as happened here, I think the open and obvious doctrine could be if the jury found there was no violation, the application of the open and obvious doctrine could be a legal conclusion.
Couldn't open and obvious relate to the proximate cause itself? I mean, you seem to suggest that if there's a regulation that applies, you don't even talk about open and obvious. But what you're talking to us here is to get it past summary judgment and get everything to the jury. And it seems to me that if the circumstances or the evidence is such that there is evidence of it being open and obvious, even if there was a safety violation, all of that should go to the jury to determine the four elements of negligence, one of which, of course, is the proximate cause.
Yes, Your Honor. I think evidence of the surrounding circumstances of the condition all go to all the elements of negligence.
Counsel, I'm thinking just as I think we think your proposal is interesting. My sense, even though I dissented Armstrong, my sense would be this court has no interest in undermining Armstrong. I don't think you're proposing that. It seems to me, rather than use the term open and obvious, what would still unfold if you persuaded us to your point of view is that let me choose a different set of words. The owner of this property would still be able and should be able to show that this condition was readily apparent instead of open and obvious. So we're not triggered because the open and obvious really goes to duty. But if it's readily apparent that there's no railing there, then the jury's going to struggle with, well, should your client have been more careful in approaching the stairs? And the extent of her injuries, are they really the proximate cause of the absence of the railing, or were they caused by just carelessness on her part?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think it gets confusing because there are a lot of legal doctrines swirling around here, and there I think you're also referencing the comparative negligence statute in Ohio, and that also comes into play when a jury's making that determination of so who's at fault.
The railing probably didn't cause her, the absence of it probably didn't cause her to fall, but she could have grabbed onto it once she lost her footing, and so it's a tough case for you, even if you
That's correct, Your Honor.
Get us around to your point of view.
That's correct, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal unless anyone has...
Thank you, Mr. Blessing. Ms. McPeak.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Monica McPeak on behalf of the appellee, AK Steel Corporation. AK Steel asks that you affirm the 12th District and the trial court's decisions and declare that summary judgment was appropriate in this case. Summary judgment was appropriate because any danger created by the lack of a handrail is open and obvious, and thus AK Steel did not owe a duty to protect the invitee from that obvious condition. In affirming summary judgment, we also ask that you adopt as the rule of law in Ohio that which the vast majority of the Ohio appellate districts have already declared. And that is,
well, counsel, let me change the facts just a little bit. I think the building codes probably spell out something about the pitch and the nature of stairs that are to be available to the public. If you had a gross violation of that, so that one step is so many inches, the next one's a different, you know, everyone's different. And it's a clear-cut violation of the building code. You don't think that should be available to say, well, the open and obvious doctrine just isn't going to apply here?
Your Honor, in response, I would first point to the Raflo versus LeSantaville Country Club case, the 1973 Supreme Court case. In that case, every party to the case admitted that the step on which the plaintiff was injured violated the Ohio Administrative Building Code with respect to the height of the stairs. And in that case, this court held that when a person confronts a condition that's open and obvious, or she knows of this peril, and traverses that step, she does it at her own risk, and summary judgment is appropriate for the landowner in that case. If not controlling, I would suggest that the Raflo case is very strong support for affirming the vast majority of the Ohio appellate district in this case.
If we were persuaded to Mr. Blessing's point of view on this case, do you think it would still be available to you on behalf of your client to show, in this case, the construction, this may not be a good example, but impossibility of performance with the regulation or the building code. There was some structural reason, or the stairs had to be used to take things that were, you know, wider than a railing would permit. There was some other reason why it just, you couldn't have a railing there. Would that, if that existed, would you, if we adopted his point of view, would the building owner still be able to show that as a part of a defense?
It's difficult to answer that question on the state of the record. What we have argued in our brief and what I'd like to focus on here is the fact that there's no evidence that a violation even exists in this case. So from that perspective, certainly we would be arguing that there is no violation. And I would suggest here to your honors that it was the appellant's obligation to establish that a building code violation or an OSHA safety standard regulation violation exists in this case to begin with. There is no evidence of that in the record in this case, such that summary judgment is appropriate. But with respect to the status
of... So you're arguing we don't even get to the interesting legal question.
That's correct. The appellant argues that there are two administrative regulation violations. He points to an OSHA regulation as well as a building code regulation, each of which under certain circumstances require handrails on stairways. The record is clear that the original OSHA citation with respect to the stairway at issue was vacated in this case. In addition, AK Steel came forward with uncontradicted expert testimony from an OSHA expert that specifically says there was no violation of the handrail regulation from the OSHA standards. In addition, as this court is aware, the building code specifically indicates that buildings that are in existence at the time of the adoption of the building code are allowed to remain in their present form. There's no evidence in the record at all to establish when AK Steel headquarters was built, what the status of the building code, if any, was at the time that the headquarters were built, and whether or not any facts would indicate that a building code regulation that came into effect years later would apply in this case. So certainly the primary argument that we would pronounce to this court is that there is no obligation to even consider the issue in this case because there is no evidence in the record to establish a violation existed.
We argue about that because the appellant, as you know, in the reply brief indicates that AK Steel modified its building and so forth. That's an issue. We really don't want to get into that, do we here?
Your Honor, I would absolutely agree with you that we don't want
to get
into that.
It goes back. I mean, if we decide, it goes back to the jury or to the judge to decide that issue, isn't it?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would argue that there is no reason to send this back to the trial court because we had a long discovery period in this case, during which any amount of evidence, if there was a violation of the building code, could have been presented and it was not. So. Sending it back to the trial court to decide whether or not the building code even applies before we then decide whether or not a regulation violation exists, I believe is outside what this court is obligated to do.
So you're basically saying that this is not the case that we should look at for the proposition of law that the appellant would have us consider based on the strong support for the summary judgment for other reasons than the issue that's before us.
That's absolutely correct.
Counsel, I wanted to understand your position on the building code. Are you saying that any violation of a building code would automatically equate to a safety violation? Is there anything in the code that says every requirement is for safety, or are there some that might be, you know, for other reasons as well?
No, I'm not saying that, and I think you raise a very good point that what we're talking about here with respect to building code violations is an administrative code that was put into force. I mean, this court in the Chambers decision noted that the multitude of building code violations, administrative code regulations, presents a near impossibility for a landowner to accommodate. And with respect to safety violations, I think we're talking about two separate things here. We're talking about a building code violation and an OSHA safety regulation, neither of which the record supports actually occurred in this case. Your Honors, I would like to suggest, in case any of you are persuaded that there is a chance that this case should go back to the trial court to determine whether or not a violation exists, I would also like to note that the rule of law that has been established by the vast majority of Ohio's appellate districts is that even if there is a violation, then if that violation is open and obvious, such that any invitee can reasonably be expected to see that and appreciate any resulting danger, then summary judgment is appropriate. The 2nd, 4th, 6th, 8th, 9th, and 12th districts have all held that summary judgment is appropriate in light of an open and obvious violation of an administrative code.
Counsel, would you comment on Robinson on that issue? As counsel points out, that was a situation where there's the duty to repair premises. The individual injured there fell over some bricks or something in the driveway, and we did not find that was a situation where summary judgment was appropriate, even though the argument was open and obvious.
Yeah, I think that the Robinson case is distinguishable on several factors. The first that you pointed out with respect to Mr. Blessing's argument, that was a statutory duty to repair. What we have here is something completely different. We have an administrative code regulation, and this court in Chambers has already stated that an Ohio building code is not a public policy statement. There's a distinction between public policy statements that the legislature passes in statutory codes and the administrative regulations such as the building code here. In addition, there's no evidence in the record to establish that AK Steel negligently maintained the steps, that the steps were in bad repair, or even that there was something about the steps that caused the fall in this case. So I think the Robinson case is clearly distinguishable on those points. Public policy.
So, counsel, let me understand that you believe that there should be a distinction between a statutory duty that is violated, such in the Robinson case that would vitiate the application of open and obvious, as opposed to merely a regulatory violation.
Yeah, and I think this court supports that in the Chambers decision. I mean, this court draws a distinction between a statutory duty with which in certain circumstances it could even arise to the level of negligence per se. And the court's reasoning in Chambers is that as opposed to going through the legislative enactment process, a building code is obviously a much different animal in that it's set forth, it's not done through legislature or legislative enactments, and it's something that, you know, as this court indicated, it's very difficult to strictly comply with the multitude of those building code violations. Public policy also supports allowing the open and obvious doctrine to apply in a case like this. The appellant would argue and has argued that if you allow summary judgment to take hold in this case, then you're allowing an owner, an occupier of land such as AK Steel to ignore violations of building codes. And that is absolutely incorrect. The vast majority of the Ohio appellate districts have held that we're not ignoring building code violations. Rather, what we're doing is we're using that as one factor to look at on summary judgment. And another factor that can be considered by courts in the summary judgments process is whether or not that violation was open and obvious. So it's not a situation where you're ignoring building code violations, but rather you're considering them as the trial court and the 12th District did in this case, and also considering whether or not it was an open and obvious violation. And I don't think there's any serious contention that the lack of a handrail on these stairs was open and obvious. This woman had been up and down those stairs every day that she worked at AK Steel for a period of 5 years. Certainly, she had knowledge of the condition of those stairs and the fact that there was not a handrail there. Moreover, Your Honors, we're not talking about every building code violation. We're only talking about the open and obvious ones. So if there's a perfect example is the Uden case, which this court heard on argument last year. In that case, we had a situation where there was a swimming pool, which arguably had openly and obviously murky water. The question in that case, though, and what the 10th District decided to remand back to the trial court on, is the fact that in that situation, we had swimming pool water that may have created a latent danger to a 10-year-old child. And whether or not that 10-year-old child could understand that murky water would present an increased or a hidden danger if she got in trouble and needed to be rescued while she was underwater. The 8th District recently, just several months ago in the Heckman case, came across the same issue, Heckman versus Mayfield Country Club. I believe it's October of 2007 decision. In that case, a woman entering a premises tripped over the threshold of a doorway, and the threshold was painted the same color as the door so that as she approached the door, there was evidence in the record that it wouldn't have been open and obvious because it blended in with the color of the door. In that situation, the court ruled that open and obvious doctrine did not apply, and summary judgment should not have been granted, and remanded to the trial court to determine whether or not there was an open and obvious violation of a code, of the building code. So we're talking about here, we're only talking about a very small portion of building code violations, those which are open and obvious. And in the event that it is an open and obvious violation, then the open and obvious doctrine would operate, and the landowner would owe no duty to invitees coming upon the land.
Ms. McPeak, the appellant cites in his reply brief the second statement of restatement of torts, and as you know, one of the alternatives to your argument would be, and to the law of some of the courts of appeals, is that a violation be used as relevant evidence bearing on the issue of negligent conduct. That seems like a pretty reasonable standard for me, and I think what Mr. Blessing is asking, I think we finally got to the point where he's saying that let the jury decide. I mean, let the jury decide that whether open and obvious supersedes the negligence if they find negligence because there was not compliance with a regulation. Let the jury decide whether the plaintiff still doesn't recover because he or she it was so obvious that the violation of the regulation didn't cause the injury. What's wrong conceptually? What's wrong with that status of the law if we were to adopt it?
Your Honor, I would argue actually that first of all that there's nothing wrong with that, and that frankly is it comports with what the 12th District and the trial court did in this case. Your Honor, I'm out of time. May I finish?
Finish, sure.
Thank you. The 12th District and the trial court both did consider whether or not the condition violated the open and obvious doctrine, or I'm sorry, violated a building code regulation. The trial court and the 12th court, or the 12th District, both assumed that there was a violation, just for the sake of argument, and then held that it was open and obvious. So I would actually argue that the 12th District and the trial court, same as the 2nd and the 4th districts, are in line with what the restatement suggests, that it can be evidence that would be relevant in determining whether or not a duty exists, but that open and obvious also is a relevant factor, such that if there's no question and a reasonable jury cannot find that the violation was not open and obvious, then there's no reason to send it to the jury.
But the judge made the factual finding then, and that the trial judge made the factual finding in that case, which usually in motions for summary judgment, trial judges are not supposed to do, are they? There has to be a legal issue that essentially decides the case at the summary judgment level that the plaintiff could not win.
Your Honor, actually, I don't believe there was a factual finding of a violation. I believe what actually occurred and what the 12th District also did was that they said, let's assume for the purposes of argument that there was a violation. There was no factual finding.
And that's the basis for your initial argument that
correct.
It shouldn't even be in this court because the appellant failed on the trial level to support his contention that there was a violation.
That's correct. There has never been any agency or adjudicating body determination that any violation exists in this case. Your Honors, thank you for your time, and we ask that the 12th District Court's determination be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McPeak. Mr. Blessing, you've saved a little more than a minute of your time.
Mr. Blessing, would you start by addressing the last point that was made by Ms. McPeak here about the fact that on the trial level, there was a failure to support the opposition to summary judgment with evidence that would have been gleaned through discovery, I'm presuming, of the actual designation of a violation.
Yes, Your Honor. The trial court had evidence that OSHA actually cited the appellee for the violation, and that's included on page 11 of appellee's supplement to her brief. And
that was vacated, was it not?
It was settled, and the settlement vacated it. I don't believe there was any adjudication on the citation.
So basically, at the time that this accident occurred, there was no violation, according to OSHA?
I believe OSHA cited AK Steel for the violation, and the parties reached an administrative settlement.
So then it was vacated. The violation was vacated at that point. There was no violation on the books at the time your client fell.
Your Honor, I'm out of time. Chief Justice, may I
respond? Sure, you can respond.
There was no violation found by OSHA. There was a citation, and there was the plain language of the statute, including the expert affidavit of John Barry, which I provided to the trial court. And the trial court looked at the evidence, assumed the evidence in favor of the non-movement, which is a standard for summary judgment, and assumed that there was a violation of the statute. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all my time.
Thank you, Mr. Blessing. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.